Welcome back to All Things Armenian. I'm Professor Barlo Dermagerdichian, the host of the program. And my guest today is Dr. Taner Akçam, who is a professor and the head of the Armenian Genocide Chair at Clark University. Now, you write your books in English based on the Turkish sources. Are those books translated into Turkish? Are they able to be translated into Turkish and read in Turkey today?
Yes. I mean, because of my own background and skill of languages, English is my third language. So I write originally always Turkish and publish first in Turkish and then translate in other languages. So every book that I publish, almost with no exception, published first in Turkish.
And so, what can the official denialists say? What can they say, or they just keep silent?
Number one, they just keep silence. And number two, denialism has nothing to do with academic integrity. You can bring all kinds of documents that show genocidal intent, but they will continue to deny because denialism is a political position. It has nothing to do with academia, with science, or with the holding on the truth and so on. So they will continue to deny the Armenian genocide because this is their in their political interest.
And so when they, that is the Turkish government, says, well, we should have a historical commission, we should bring scholars to debate and look at things, this is simply a subterfuge.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they will find all kind of excuses to deny the Armenian genocide, not to acknowledge it, because they are scared of ramification of such an acknowledgement. And it is, as I said, again, it is a political issue, it is a political decision, and only a political movement within Turkey and a systematic pressure from international world might change Turkish government's attitude, and it's not an easy job.
Yeah, that would mean there's a more successful, let's say, democratization or liberalization maybe of Turkish society, and in that context, then the Armenian genocide would become easier to look at as a political issue.
Perfect, exactly.
Yeah.
Without, I mean, there is a very strong interrelation between Turkey's democratization and acknowledgement of historic wrongdoing. Without having freedom of speech, without having open debate, open discussion, without facing history honestly with all possible means, you cannot really develop an honest image of history, and you cannot acknowledge Armenian genocide. You need first a democratic country that really democratically debates and discusses about its own past.
And even within the context of multiple changes, and we're not talking about all of this political history of Turkey, but I think you would have to say, and you as a person who's lived in Turkey and visited over the past 40, 50 years, it has changed, however, hasn't it? I mean, there is a democratization. Maybe it's not exactly what maybe people in the United States might want, but there has been definitely an opening, don't you think?
Oh, of course. There are so many up and downs over the years. You can be an optimist today, arguing that we are those critical historians or intellectuals or civil society, the part of civil society in Turkey, that we won the psychological war, actually. We are not anymore in the defense as we were during Hrant's time. They still maybe try today attack us or bring us to the court and so on. But overall, in the society, I argue at least that the government in a defensive position. There has been an important change, and there is a backlash in these years, and I'm sure that it will come back again. And so over these 20, 30 years, one can easily argue that there has been a huge progress, of course. This is, of course, not what we finally want, but it is a huge step towards the future.
We were having a conversation, and it was very interesting because we were discussing about genocide research and how things may change and denial of genocide as a political issue. But you've been studying now genocide for probably over 30 years. And on a personal level, do you see changes in on a personal level in Turkey? I mean, in the scholarly level, are there Turkish scholars who are able to talk about the genocide, maybe not even using the word genocide, but in their research?
Not in this very moment. I mean, these years are very dark years for Turkish history. Not only the Armenian genocide, but you cannot talk on all other issues also freely. There are now dozens of journalists in prison, and political persecution is on the Turkish agenda, and we have really a very oppressive authoritarian regime. And in that sense, I would say for coming years, I'm very pessimistic. But, you know, it will go over sometimes, but then we don't know.
Yes, because actually then within Turkey itself, the Turkish history is not able to be studied in an open manner, right?
Of course. I mean, how many academicians were kicked out from universities? There are, if I'm not mistaken, thousands of academicians in Europe seeking for political asylum. So there is a backlash in Turkey, cultural, political, intellectual backlash. And Turkey really goes through a medieval dark period. And let's hope that won't take longer, but this is the reality that we are facing at this very moment.
Yes, and about now 13 years ago, a close friend of yours, Hrant Dink, was assassinated in Turkey. He was the editor of Agos, and I wanted to ask you about his approach to the genocide. What was his way of trying to bring together Turks and Armenians? How did he see the problem?
I mean, his main purpose, his main goal was to get both nations to live in peace and democracy in the area, period. Open the border between Turkey and Armenia and to normalize the relation between both countries. And he considered the recognition of Armenian genocide only as a part of this bigger picture, big picture. For him, the essential issue was Turkey's democratization and normalization of the relation between Turkey and Armenia.
And starting first within the country of Turkey, right? That's what you're
saying. He was very much, how should I formulate? He didn't like foreign parliament make decision about genocide. He didn't like much using third parties, pressuring Turkey and so on. His main goal was to create a movement within Turkey. Recognition of Armenian genocide was for him a part of Turkey's democratization. I think he was successful to mobilize an important group, an important part of Turkish civil society. Today, even today, despite all these attacks against democratic opposition, Turkish government, for example, still leaves what I call Armenian corner in peace. They don't arrest Armenian political party members, for example, Garo Faylan. He is very active in Kurdish party, and even though Turkish government puts more than 10 deputies from this party in prison and suppress the Kurdish opposition, or Turkish government closed down so many foundations, so many democratic institutions, they don't want to, directly go after Hrant Dink Foundation, for example. They restrict their area of activities. For example, Hrant Dink Foundation cannot organize easily conferences. The conferences they want to organize was banned, or they don't allow, Turkish government doesn't allow for certain events and so on. But even under these very difficult circumstances, Hrant Dink Foundation is doing a great job, and Turkish government is very careful. I think there is a difference in Turkey today, a distinction between Hrant Dink and anything else. Recently, maybe you also have heard that there was a threat against Hrant Dink by Frakel Dink.
Yes,
even
I did.
Even though in last year, for example, last month, there were so many attacks against Armenian churches, against Armenian cultural institutions, or there were attacks on the church also, the painting the church doors and so on. All kind of things have been happening in Turkey. And recently, Hrant Dink Foundation received a death threat, and they make it public, and it is unbelievable. As soon as Dink Foundation make these attacks known, Turkish government arrested the guy within 12 hours. And now there is a charge against him. They put him in prison, and more than 5 years asking now for him, only for sending this threat email to the foundation. So what I'm trying to say here, Hrant Dink left a legacy in this country. There is, in that sense, a small difference between Hrant Dink and anything else. So Turkish government also very careful in their attack, in their policies towards Hrant Dink. This shows only one thing, if you ask me, that Hrant legacy is a very important one, and it has a solid ground in Turkish society. And I might compare him with Martin Luther King of the United States, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great comparison. Now, you've been studying, and of course, Armenian genocide, and we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show about, of course, the difficulty in saying that, you know, any one topic like the Armenian genocide could be exhausted in a scholarly way. But I'd like to hear from you. Where do you feel are some of the future areas that still need more research, or maybe even reopening old ways of looking at things, or reevaluations of the genocide?
I can make it a 10-page list of the areas. It is really, I would argue that the Armenian genocide research compared to Holocaust in its fledgling area, period. And we have so many things to do. Just an example, we don't have any serious scholarly work except now a couple maybe on the local area. What happened in each and every city. Local histories, we don't have it. Ümit Kurt's study on Aintab is a wonderful start, but what about all other Armenian provinces and cities and towns? Or another major issue, what was the role of Kurds during Armenian genocide? Nobody studied that topic extensively. Or the role of religion during Armenian genocide. Nobody looked in the role of religion seriously. Or the connecting point between Assyrian, Greek, and Armenian genocide. There are some small efforts in this direction, but it hasn't been studied extensively yet. So there are so many things to do in our field. I'm looking from the perpetrator perspective. For example, we don't have any biographies of perpetrators, seriously. Only recently, Hans Lucas published a biography on Talat Pasha, and this is it. We don't have anything else. I mean, if you compare this with Holocaust, you have the biographies of really any small, maybe SS officers there, but we don't have anything in our field. It is the same if you look the genocide from the victim perspective. What is the gender aspect of the genocide? What was the role of the woman during this period? Or overall, the question of resistance. Do we know any serious work, study on the resistance against genocide? You know, because Turkish government blamed that Armenians were organizing an uprising and so on and so forth. And all Armenian historiography or in Armenian genocide, people prefer to portray Armenians as sheep, you know, waiting in their corners, their destiny. They never reacted to this genocidal process. But it is human nature. You resist if somebody wants to kill you. And we don't have any serious studies on resistance. What is the resistance in Sabastia? What is the resistance in Bitlis, in Van? Do we know this? Only a couple of monographs, maybe here and there, but we don't have any systematic studies in this field. And this is the reason that I'm saying, you know, only a research institute can solve all these problems.
And so actually, for any students out there listening, there is so much that that they could get interested in and pursue as a doctoral study or any type of study, right?
Yes, it is true. We need, in that sense, more. But only you can get, this is the catch-22 situation. If you don't have enough funding, you cannot attract students. And if you don't have a research institute that creates certain positions, research project that really supports also these students, you cannot attract students coming in this program. So this is the reason that what necessitates is the institutionalization. We have to create institutions. We have to rescue our field from individuals. We have to turn over these individual capacities to institutions. This is what should be done in our field.
And just to conclude today, in your own work, you've been working on letters, and what's the future hold in your work? Where are your areas that you're continuing to look at?
Oh, I'm working now very concrete on Cemal Pasha. I'm trying to understand his role during Armenian genocide. As you may know, there is a widespread understanding or belief that Cemal Pasha was kind of different than Talat or the other perpetrators, and he tried to save Armenian lives, and some scholar even went so far claiming that he was a humanitarian resistance fighter against Istanbul government. And I'm trying to look closer where this myth came from, and why people believe that Cemal was different than the others. And of course, more importantly, what was Cemal's role during Armenian genocide? And this is only possible if we know what happened in Syria 1915, 16, 17 in these 3 years. I'm looking very closely in this period, and based on, of course, mainly Ottoman materials. I'm going through more than maybe 30,000-40,000 of Ottoman documents. I think I will be able to develop a solid image of Cemal Pasha and his role during Armenian genocide.
Well, it's been a really fascinating hour. It's gone by so quickly because it's just really been so interesting. My guest has been Dr. Taner Akcam, professor of Armenian Genocide Studies at Clark University. Thank you so much for joining me and sharing your thoughts and ideas, Taner.
Thank you so much for having me on your program, Berlo.
Thank you very much. And once again, this has been a topic that the Armenian genocide that is full of a lot of interesting types of approaches. And once again, my guest today was Dr. Taner Akcam. And for all things Armenian, this is Professor Barlow Demirgardichian wishing you a good week ahead. And join us next week for another episode of All Things Armenian.